If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Amateur Traveler, episode 158. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks to Alex Lindsay about Zimbabwe. Learn about this beautiful African country that's had some problems but is still worth visiting today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into the interview with Alex, I do have some travel news for you. There's some people who are probably glad who are going to be flying on a United Airlines flight from London last week that the pilot, when he passed through security, was stopped by the security guards because he was drunk and was not allowed to fly the plane, which seems like a good idea. And something else that seems like a good idea, some residents of Paris who are tired of people thinking that Parisians are rude have banded together and will show people around their fair city for free. And these Paris greeters, as they are known, are also happy to do the tours in English, so that's something you might want to check out if you're going to the City of Lights. If you are an American who happens to like traveling on the train, you might be interested in knowing that Amtrak is now offering discount passes to U.S. residents that used to only be available to those who lived outside the country. So check that out. Passes are for 15, 30, and 45 days of travel. Links to all of those stories, as well as other ones, like Iceland being up for sale on eBay, can be found in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core, who's come to talk to us about Zimbabwe. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I feel like saying, Alex, finally welcome to the show. Alex and I met in January of 2007 at Macworld and talked in great depth and passion about Africa. I had just been to Tanzania, and Alex has a great love for Zimbabwe, and we've been meaning to get you on the show since then. So welcome at last.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, you don't live in Zimbabwe most of the year, but I know you have said to me before that you would move to Zimbabwe if your wife would let you. So why Zimbabwe?
There's so many reasons. So I got into Africa mostly. That was funny. I was talking to someone from National Geographic, actually, and I got into Africa from National Geographic when I was 10. My great-grandmother died, and everybody inherited something. And I inherited a suitcase full of National Geographics from the 20s and 30s. I was fascinated. Back then, they were just discovering Africa, and I just would be reading all these articles about that and just found myself always interested. I found, as I did more and more work, I was just always looking at Africa in general, everything from East Africa to Southern Africa to West Africa, mostly in the sub-Saharan area. Mm-hmm. And then I got into an idea of really using the work that I do, media, to energize economies. And I started doing math, and it just turned out that the math for what I wanted to do made the most sense in Zimbabwe. They have extremely high literacy rates, extremely high English rates, extremely high entrepreneurial society, as well as a very peaceful society. I mean, we look at the trouble that is going on there, and the fact that it isn't a revolution is a testament to the culture there. So as I started to look at that, of course, I mean, that on paper made a lot of sense, and I was very excited about it. But what really happened, of course, is that I decided that Zimbabwe is the place to go. I went to Zimbabwe. And of course, what happens when you're in Africa is it seeps into your blood. I think that if you stay in the urban areas, sometimes it doesn't quite have the same effect. But I think that when you get into the rural areas, you get to be part of that culture and you get to know people there. You can't shake it at that point. And I've talked to a lot of people that have gone to Africa, and it sounds like I think you had a similar experience. It really is something. There was a day outside of Mashingo, Zimbabwe, this great Imbira artist named Simon Mashoko was playing Imbira, which is this little thumb piano, and his family is dancing around all over the place. And it was just this hard to describe, and it's hard to unlatch what about it made sense or what about it hit us. But it was probably one of the most amazing experiences of my life, just sitting there being part of this process. So then my interest in Zimbabwe went from a mathematical equation to a very personal, this is something that I'm going to do rather than something that makes sense and maybe I'll see if it works.
Zimbabwe has gone through some tough times recently, a little bit of unrest there, and certainly they've gone from kind of a breadbasket in South Saharan Africa to a place that's actually importing food because of some of the unrest there. Is it a place right now that you would feel comfortable telling people who don't have those personal connections yet to go?
Yeah, I wouldn't go everywhere, but I think that if you're clear of what you're doing and so on and so forth, one of the things you're going to find is that Zimbabweans are incredibly opened, incredibly helpful. There's definitely places that are easier to go to, like Victoria Falls, which is just gorgeous,
right.
And there's not that many people right now. And the big advantage of Zimbabwe at the moment is that it is relatively peaceful, and there are some difficulties. But if you work with a tour operator who is able to negotiate all the issues that are required to kind of get you from point A to point B, and that's mostly dealing with hard-to-find cash, hard-to-find petrol, getting down to Great Zimbabwe. Great Zimbabwe, and it's during the tourist season before, like in the 90s, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, would have had hundreds of people there at any one time during the tourist season. Now there's 10. It's much more incredible with a handful of people where you really get to be part of this and you really get to see all of that. When it turns around, it's going to go back to hundreds. And so in the same way, Tanganyika, which is a society for sculptors, it's right near a vein of serpentine stone. Tanganyika has got hundreds of sculptors, and you can go up there and there's almost no one there, and you can buy incredible. And I mean, the sculptures that are 3 feet high for hundreds of dollars, not tens of thousands of dollars. And that's what you'd pay if you were in the United States. I highly suggest going now. You know, definitely there are things not to do. There are sensitivities that the government has about the press. So you don't want to be mistaken for someone in the press. They don't have any problem with someone who's a tourist. In fact, of course, they love to have you there. And so looking like press, bringing down big, big cameras. We're usually pretty careful about taking down handheld cameras, stuff that isn't going to catch too much attention. Shooting a lot of video and a lot of stills in a rural village is usually something that you want to be kind of awake to. People being sensitive, asking lots of questions about the government is another thing that, you know, you just want to be careful of. I wouldn't say it's a blanket. Everything's going to work fine. I have to admit, I've been only going to Zimbabwe during the troubles. I don't have any picture of what it's like. You know, I think it'll just be really cool when I get to go down and I don't worry about these things. But in any African country, not any African country, but I think a lot of them, you do have to be awake. And I think you have to be, I'm in New York City, I have to be awake. You can go to certain parts of town and you just need to keep your eyes open. You know, in the same way, I think that in Zimbabwe or many African countries, South Africa, even Tanzania, wherever you're going, you just have to be aware of your surroundings and what you're doing and how you're mixing into the system.
And we should point out, when we say that it's more difficult than it used to be considered sort of Africa light, that this was the place to go if you had not necessarily a big sense of adventure. It's not the Congo, it's not the way Kenya was last year and such, but it's not as easy as it was before, maybe like as easy as, say, Tanzania would be right now, for instance.
Tanzania is very easy. I think that Zimbabwe is probably one of the most developed and successful countries going into the late 90s. And definitely in the mid-90s and early 90s, it was very, very successful. It had a mixture of all kinds of, obviously, a lot of farming, as well as a very booming, very quickly booming tourist business, as well as a very large platinum producer, now diamonds and everything else. And so there's a lot of opportunity there. One thing I think is interesting is when people think about farming, we want to remember that a lot of the farming there is tobacco and flowers and not necessarily grain. corn. And so a lot of the problems are mostly dealing with not having enough revenue. They were able to support themselves, but it wasn't like a lot of the farming that has been taken over was not necessarily all corn or grain. It was also the big cash crops.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Interesting.
Yeah, tobacco was the big industry there. But the problem is, of course, is now the government doesn't have enough money to buy what it needs to buy. You know, right. that's the real issue, because without the tax revenue. So
we said if someone should go, they should definitely see Victoria Falls. What else would you put on a 1 to 2 week itinerary for Zimbabwe?
If I was there for 1 to 2 weeks, I would probably go to Victoria Falls. I would go to Great Zimbabwe.
When you say Great Zimbabwe, I actually haven't been to Zimbabwe. So what is Great Zimbabwe?
Great Zimbabwe is the largest man-made stone structure south of the Nile.
I know what you're talking about. Okay, right.
Yeah, so the thing that most people would recognize is what's called the Great Enclosure. Mm-hmm. And the Great Enclosure, no one really knows what it was for. What most people believe is there's about 18,000 people that lived there in the 12th or 13th century. And that they, for whatever reason, you know, they expanded. So it was based on gold and cattle, and it was an empire. The Shona Empire there. And for whatever reason, they probably, if you read enough of Jared Diamond, they probably, you know, ran out of resources, dissipated. But they left this incredible structure there. There was a village outside of the structure. A lot of people think that it might have been a place to initiate adolescents into the culture. No one really knows what's there. But they have the conical tower, which is something you see on a lot of Zimbabwe notes, that's inside of the Great Enclosure. It's a mixture of being amazing and a little spooky at times. And you go through it, but there's just incredible views. If you go up into where the former palace, not the palace, but the former where the chief would stay, it's up way up a hill. You get these incredible views that are really definitely worth checking out. And it's just one of those things. It's a cultural site that is something that I think most people should definitely see. Also, if you are in the Victoria Falls area, there's also, and I never say it right, but it's Wangi Park. It's H-W-A-N-G-E. And that is just probably 45 minutes or an hour south of Victoria Falls. One of the things about that area is it's one of the largest populations of elephants in Africa. Hmm. I believe, I'm not positive of this number, but I believe it's somewhere in the vicinity of 180,000 elephants between that area and right on the border of Botswana and Zambia. And they're actually working together on how they manage the elephant population. But there's a very, very large elephant population there. There's a lot of other wildlife there. And we had a lot of fun going there. They have a lot of watering holes, which is really cool and part of the problem and as far as population management. But it's a great location. There's also, in Victoria Falls, there is a place called the Victoria Falls Lodge. You literally are sitting over a water hole watching all this wildlife eating while you're eating or drinking mostly. A little bit of eating. The alligators in there. So anyway, that's a great area. That park is really close to Victoria Falls, so it's definitely worth seeing. If you're in the Harare area, one of the things that is really fascinating is a place called Domashawa, which is just outside. It's probably 20 minutes outside of Harare. I'm not even positive of what formed the rock formations, but there's these huge round rock formations that you can climb up. You can walk up. It's a bit of a workout to get to the very top, but not hard. It's not like you're rock climbing or anything. You can definitely walk up. It's fairly steep. And when you get to the top, you just have this incredible view over Harare and in the vicinity. Another area that I have not been to, but I have been told by Zimbabweans that I'm missing out on, is the Eastern Mountains. They're supposed to be gorgeous and very lush and green, and I haven't seen that yet.
Good time of year to go to Zimbabwe, or bad time of year?
It depends on what you like. So I like it to be chilly. So, and I know that sounds odd. I go to Africa and I like it to be chilly. But remember, the summer there is in the holiday season for us here, or here in the United States. So the winter in Zimbabwe is really the end of May to middle of August. And so almost all of my trips are in that vicinity. I typically go twice a year to Zimbabwe for HIFA, which is the Harare International Festival for the Arts, which is one of the largest arts festivals in Africa and one of the most amazing experiences that I've had there. It's a huge festival in the first week of May, and it's artists from all over Africa playing on four different stages, thousands of people. You think of Zimbabwe as nothing's going on there, but during HIFA, it's a huge deal. So we're shooting down there, for instance, next May, and then we go for the Zimbabwe International Film Festival in September. I like June myself. It's a bit dry. It's chilly, so you need to bring a couple layers. It'll be 75 degrees Fahrenheit during the day, maybe 80 at the highest, and it'll drop down to 40, 45 degrees at night. But I find that to be more comfortable.
What do the guidebooks recommend that you don't think is worth the time?
You know, I have to admit, I've never read a guidebook of Zimbabwe. So I don't know what they suggest. My whole thing is that I've gone down for work. So most of my time is spent doing work, and it takes me all over the country. I feel very blessed to have that opportunity to go all over the country in Zimbabwe and bring friends down and so on and so forth. But I've never picked up a book there. So I don't know. I know that a lot of people who I talk to who visit don't go to places like Tanganyika very often. And I think Tanganyika, I think someone said, is like a little paragraph in most books. But it's really, it's a great afternoon. course, Harare, when you go there in the city, you know, is, I believe it's near 5,000 feet high, 5,000 feet altitude, which means it's something you'll actually notice in a lot of African countries is some of the highest points of the capital. And the reason is the mosquitoes that carry malaria don't go that high. So Harare, you don't really think about malaria medicine, but you do when you get further out.
And did you use other resources the first time you went there before you had local contacts, which I assume you use a lot of now? Are there other resources you used for planning?
You know, I have to admit that I waited for a local contact.
Okay.
So
All right.
I actually, when I went, I didn't go without the local contact. I literally wanted to go there for a year and just waited for somebody to show up. I tend to have a very odd way of doing that where I know what I want to do. There's a saying, and I don't know who said it first, that luck is when opportunity meets preparation. Or preparation meets opportunity, one or the other. And so I just prepare and I know what I want to do, and then I just wait for things to show up. So what I did is I just knew that that's where I wanted to go. And a teacher named Saki Mufundakwa posted a request for computers, Macintoshes. And I said, I don't have computers, but yeah, I'd love to come down and do some training. And so that's how we kind of ended up in the middle of it. And then from then on, I just knew people. So I don't have a big experience. There's a lot of people. If you stay at a good bed and breakfast, I mean, we stay at a little bed and breakfast called the Baobab. And if you stay there, or if you stay at a good bed and breakfast, most of the time they'll know where to go and the things to do. And they'll oftentimes be able to kind of work you through the issues. Hotels are a little bit more complicated. They're a little less personal. We stayed there the first time we stayed in a hotel, but a lot of times it's a better situation in a bed and breakfast for many reasons. It's oftentimes less expensive to stay in a bed and breakfast because the hotels have a legal rule about what they charge foreigners. So you'll pay $80 a night minimum for a hotel, but a bed and breakfast can be as low as $25 to $35 a night.
Interesting. And I assume that Zimbabwe, we're talking about relatively low salaries for Zimbabweans. Am I saying that correctly? On average,
yes.
Like $3, $4 a day or along that range?
Minimum wage is about $4 a month.
$4 a month. Wow.
Yeah, but most people pay more than that.
Sure.
Although some don't. What happens is that they keep on moving the minimum wage up, but with an inflation of 44 million or something like that, the government oftentimes doesn't post it. So sometimes the minimum wage is as high as $40 a month and then drops down to $4 in the course of a week.
When they revalue the currency or?
Yeah, the value of the currency is constantly moving. You just get used to it.
Where they keep lopping zeros off, basically?
They've lopped 10 so far off the value so far. And it's just something that's actually.
They've lopped 10.
10 zeros. It's trillions or quadrillions or whatever. And just to put that in perspective, in 2000 when I was there, it was 37 Zim dollars to one U.S. dollar. Now it's, I want to say, 12,000 to one, but that's after 10 zeros have been knocked off. It's accelerating because, of course, they're running out of ways to print cash and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of stuff that you have to understand about the country there, but it's not that bad, as I said. Especially right now, what I would do is I'd either have a local contact or I'd work with a tour operator who is going to kind of buffer it. I think that it would be very difficult to go to Zimbabwe and just land in Harare and then figure it out.
Okay.
You'd want to have a local contact there. And there's lots of tour operators that are scrambling to keep moving forward. They'd love to have your business, and they have all the contacts. People who are there, I mean, what's fascinating about Zimbabwe is you'll go to downtown Harare, and it's bustling. There's people everywhere. There's cars. It's congested. The country has not stopped. And I think that's a huge testament to everyone living there, that people figure it out. They just keep on figuring it out. So as long as you're working with someone who's figuring it out, most of the time, you'll do fine.
You talked about local contacts. Who's the most memorable person you've met?
Wow. I don't know if I can. There's great artists that we've met. So there's Oliver Tkudzi, one of the largest artists in Zimbabwe or Southern Africa, and who's an amazing person, just amazing person himself. And Chiwenizu Murari, who's also a great Mbira artist. I mean, I think a lot of the people that I've hung out with have been artists and music artists. Dominic Benhura, who has gone as a sculptor from basically the very basics to one of the top artists in the world when it comes to sculpture right now.
I think I saw a video you did on him, if I'm not mistaken.
I've done short videos of Bronson, and I can't pronounce Bronson's last name, so I'm not going to try to butcher it up. But some of the videos that we've shot of him have been fantastic. You know, there's so many people, I guess, that I have to say that I'm so fond of. I have so many friends there that it'd be very hard for me to pick out one individual that really is unique among that, because I think that everyone from Saki Mufundakwa, who brought me there, to folks that work at Ideas at Work, and the folks at Ziff, and obviously these artists, Chi and Oliver, and the sculptors. I mean, all of these people are just fantastic. So I don't think I could answer that question very specifically.
Okay. When you first went to Zimbabwe, what was the biggest surprise?
What was the biggest surprise? Okay, well, so I guess the first thing to say is that the first time I left North America was going to Zimbabwe.
Oh, really?
So,
wow.
So I didn't have any...
Well, that's jumping into the deep end of the pool there.
Yeah. So I got my passport like 4 days before I left. I didn't have a passport. I didn't even really know I needed one. You know, I mean, it was just completely, I didn't know what a passport was. They were like, you know, do you have your passport? I'm like, I've never seen one before. So I went and picked up a passport, crazy blue thing, which is funny because at this point I've added to my passport extra pages, like the extra set of pages, and it's almost all full and it's so beaten up that I have to get a new one. So it's come a long way in the last 8 years. So I got to Zimbabwe, and I think, you know, the first thing that really struck me when I got there was I got there and it was a little airport. Now it's gotten much bigger and much nicer now, but really was a welcome to Africa. I mean, I'm used to these big...
Sure, sure.
In the United States. For instance, you know, my uncle had a grass airfield that he landed a Cessna in, but that's the only small airport experience I've ever really had. Mostly, they're all international airports in one way or another. So you land there in this little brick building. and it was very affronting. You really realized you were in Africa, a whole different reality. The second thing that I think really struck me when I was in Zimbabwe was... We got to the school that we were working in, and we had kind of figured out some computer issues, and we were getting ready to leave, and we heard this huge bang go outside. I mean, you could hear crumpling metal. And this guy had come out of a little street, and we were on a main drag, and this bus had just slammed into this car, and no one was hurt, but they had crushed the front of the car from the side, kind of rolled over it. What was amazing was that suddenly a whole bunch of people came out to see what was going on, and then they rolled the car back up, and then they made sure the people got out, made sure everyone was okay, and then they all started talking, and then they all started laughing, and next thing you know, they were all singing. it was crazy. You went from this horrible car accident to singing, and I don't know what they were singing about. I imagine that they were singing about, they were thanking the ancestors for the fact that people didn't get crushed by the bus, but it could have been just some kind of fun drinking song too. I don't know. I don't know what they were singing about, but it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. What I thought was fascinating is I just sat there with a bunch of us were just looking at it going, I think I'm really going to like this country. You know, it was just a very warm experience. But I think those are some of the first things that I was hit with when I got there.
So you didn't even know what a passport was. What do you wish you had known before you went?
Well, you know, I look at how I traveled back then and how I travel now. My packing was kind of haphazard. and I travel now. I probably am gone 3 months of the year now, going somewhere. In fact, I'm talking to you now. I live in San Francisco. I'm in New York. I'll be in Philadelphia tomorrow and New Mexico on Sunday. So it's kind of like a normal thing. And I'm so methodical now. I have all these little Eagle Creek bags that everything's all packed. And it's all modular. Everything has its own bag and everything is a specific way. And there are some.
I'm going to bet you pack less now than you used to.
You know, when I came to Zimbabwe, I had the two large rolling Samsonite bags. I have to admit, I was taking some equipment down too. But still, it was a lot of clothes. It was a lot of knickknacks. I don't know what I was taking down there. You know, so now I do know is I brought a lot of sculpture bags. So I was kind of glad that I had it there. But I had these two huge bags that were just short of 70 pounds. You know, I remember because when we were leaving Zimbabwe and we had all the sculpture on the bags, we actually put our toe on the scale, actually had a lip. And we put our toe on it and push up when we put the bags on because they were like 72 pounds. And so we pulled 2 pounds off with our toe before they put them in. And so I know that they were really close to 70 pounds. So we brought these two huge, heavy bags. And now I went to Africa last year for 6 weeks and I had a roll-on, mm-hmm. like a carry-on.
Sure, yeah.
A carry-on and a backpack. I can travel indefinitely with a carry-on and a backpack at this point. It was funny. My flight was canceled yesterday.
Yeah, I saw your Twitter about that.
Yeah, I was Twittering. My flight was canceled yesterday, and it was so funny. I changed my flight really quickly and made sure I got on the next flight. And this woman asked, she goes, did you check bags? And I admit it sounded arrogant. I just go, I don't really check bags. You know, I was just like, I don't really do that. What happened was it's very easy and very fun. Not fun, but it's very easy and seamless to change flights when you're carrying everything.
Sure.
When it's all with you, it's very stressful and highly prone to losing your bags when you start checking them. And so when I look back, I'm not so stressed when I'm traveling. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of what happened was I just didn't know. I didn't know what's going to happen next.
Sure.
I didn't know what was going to be around the next corner, which made it exciting, sometimes too exciting. I worried more than I probably needed to. I definitely would never take Larium again.
Oh, okay. It's the anti-malarial pill.
It's the evil drug.
The one that may cause vivid dreams or however you term it.
It could be a lot worse. I do have Malarone that I have ready. Malarone is a much, much kinder, gentler drug.
Although the problem that I know that people run into, I could not, for instance, get Malarone covered by my health plan. It was too new at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They would only cover Larium.
No one should take lyrium.
Yeah.
Unless you specifically have an allergy to Mallarone, you shouldn't be taking lyrium. And for me, I don't care what my insurance says. I'm not going to put it in my body. I saw someone who we were with go loopy. I don't mean like vivid dreams. I mean mood swings and crazy stuff.
Interesting.
So as far as I'm concerned, it's a psychoactive drug. To go off on a tangent here for a second, I feel like lyrium gives you all the experience of malaria without the fever. So it's a crazy drug. So anyway, I wouldn't take that again. I would eat more of the local food more often. I think that when we first got there, we were kind of trying to find, I don't know what it was. I mean, some of the guys were trying to find stuff that was a little bit more Western, you know, whatever. And
probably not as well made then, because they don't know how to make Western food as well as they know how to make the local food.
And the local food is so good. And here's the other thing is when you're in Africa, unless the people around you are eating with utensils, don't. It's so much fun. Finger food is so much fun. It's so funny. I come back from Africa now every single time and I begrudgingly pick up the fork again. I'm just like, oh, I'm back to it. Back to the grind. I'm trying to learn how to make the food that I eat down in Zimbabwe because I like it so much.
Any particular things you would recommend, especially for a first-time traveler? Don't forget to try
There's a staple meal that you can have almost anywhere that's serving anything remotely traditional, which is beef stew and sadza. Sadza is every country has its kind of starch.
Yep,
so sadza is the starch. It's a very fine corn millet. In the United States, the only place you can get it is Indian grocery stores, and it's called Indian Head.
Okay.
Or called corn flour. It's yellow. They use white in Zimbabwe, but it's basically like a finer version of grits. And then you have this beef stew, which is usually fantastic. And then you typically have collard greens. You pick up the starch and you either dip it in the stew or you grab some meat and you grab some collard greens and you have it. And it's a very good meal. I mean, I like it a lot. And so that's the thing I would suggest. The other thing that I would suggest, and I would suggest this in any country beyond food, is there are a handful of greetings that you can learn on the way down. They're not hard to learn. And it is, especially if you're Caucasian, like myself, you get a lot of bonus points. You get gold stars for playing hard.
I got applause from a big group of people just for speaking 10 words of Swahili in Tanzania.
Yeah, it is, because I'm trying to learn. I have the Rosetta Stone on Swahili.
Yeah.
And I can actually listen through all of that. And in Shona, you know, I don't have that yet. They don't have one, but I'm working on it. But in Shona, the typical, when you're saying hello in the morning, it'd be like Magwanani. If you want to ask how someone woke, you'd say mamukase, and if they respond, they'll go damuka kana mamukao, and you'll say damuka. Literally, you get that far and you're friends forever. I don't know if you're friends forever, but you're friends for a long time. I mean, they're especially, you come off the plane like that, and being able to ask for things specifically, and people love in Zimbabwe to teach you. So if you ask, how do I say this, or what is this, or how would I do this, they usually very much enjoy teaching you. They're kind of amused.
Sure.
By pale face, sitting there asking them how to say certain things and then making the best shot that you can. It's a little easier to speak Shona than Ndebele, because Ndebele has lots of clicks.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a little harder for my ear, anyway, and my tongue, to make the noises that I need. I'm getting better, but it's a little bit more difficult. Shona is actually, I find, fairly easy to pick up and to use.
Now, my impression is you could get by fine in English as far as getting by, but this is just getting you more...
It's purely,
immersed.
They will not expect you.
Exactly.
It's not like France, where they just expect you to try to speak French. They have no expectation of you being able to speak. If you go anywhere in the country and anywhere else that's remotely a tourism spot, they're not going to have any expectation that you speak anything but English. But if you speak Shona, or if you can say hi in Shona and just kind of do the pleasantries in Shona, you just get a much warmer welcome. Even just little things like saying tatenda, which is thank you, that type of stuff. And good is jakanaka, which is like the best word for good ever made. Like when you're feeling good and how's things going, you can go jakanaka. I love that word, so that's what anyway.
And speaking of good, as we wind this down, the best day you've had in Zimbabwe.
One of the things I talked about earlier was that the day that I was, it was a Sunday, and we were visiting Simon Mashoko and his family outside of Mashvingo. And when we got there, you could hear them in the church. They were singing Amazing Grace and playing Mbira, and they were singing it in Shona. But you knew the melody, and it was just the most amazing version I'd ever heard. And so we get there, and then they come out, and his daughter is carrying a 10-foot log that's like 6 inches in diameter on her head. And she comes by and she shakes all of our hands walking by going, hello, 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 sorry. You know, and like, we're pretty amazed. Anyway, so And then we had some beer, and Simon started playing. His grandkids were running around. They, you know, I'm not sure if they'd ever seen cameras before, but they hadn't seen them recently. And they thought it was when we turned the camera around so they could see what
was being
shot.
So they could see the pictures. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They thought it was the most amazing thing they'd ever seen. And so there was just a lot of laughter and people dancing. And one of the other cameramen just looked at me, you know, in the middle of it, and he just goes, you know, we are surrounded by angels. I mean, he's just like completely like this. Whoa, I'm starting to lose track of reality. it was just this incredible, and it's hard to explain. Like when I explain the details of it, it may not seem that way, but when you were there in the middle of it all, it was a feeling that's pretty hard to describe.
I can relate. Okay. As we go to wrap this up, what three words would you use to summarize Zimbabwe?
Beautiful, creative. I'd say beautiful, creative, and spiritual.
Okay. Alex, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your love of Zimbabwe.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Normally, I'd point you at an internet travel resource at this portion of the show, but I'm going to skip that today. I would remind you that if you are listening to this before November 6, 2008, feel free to go vote for the Amateur Traveler at podcastawards.com, where the show has again been nominated this year. I did get a letter recently from Sharon that said, I recently discovered your podcasts, and I am thrilled that I did. Your podcasts are very entertaining and informative. Just curious as whether you are available to answer questions or give advice. I am planning a trip to Italy, and I have a few questions I'd like to ask of someone such as yourself who has been to places that I am planning to visit. I have a question about driving to Italy and also some other things. I don't know if you have a Q&A section of your website or an area where people can ask travel planning questions. And I do, as I wrote back to Sharon, and I recommend that people go to the discussion boards, amateurtraveler.com/board, B-O-A-R-D, where they can ask both me and then also other members of the community. For some questions, you might get better answers from the community than you would from me. It might be a place that I have not personally been. So feel free to check that out. And with that, I think we'll draw this show to a close. If you have any comments, feel free to post them at amateurtraveler.com or send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.